sincere Spider-Man fans, and welcome to another spectacular episode of the Spectacular Webs Podcast. I'd like to tell you that we're on Podomatic, but don't know where this episode will be broadcasting live from. Probably Podomatic. We'll touch on that in a little bit. Of course, I am your Promtime host, Thomas Promtime Mattis. And I have not one, but two PICs, partners in crime, with me tonight. Of course, first is my usual, my brother from another mother, my good friend Donna Mark. Donna Mark, how you doing tonight?
Hiya, hiya.
And our other PIC is our new permanent, second guest host. Well, not guest host, but second co-host. You heard him on, it was on the season finale of season one, and so many of you loved hearing him on there and all the great knowledge he brought. You wanted us to make him permanent, so we listened to you and we made it permanent. Ladies and gentlemen, our new co-host, Greg XB.
Yes, all those phantom people, they loved me so much. Thanks.
Well, it was your groupies. Your groupies.
My groupies.
Yeah. I never thought I'd hear Greg XB saying, I just wish these bleeps would just get the hell off me. as I mentioned before, I don't know, as of this moment, where you might be listening to this from. It's probably going to be on Podomatic, so again, you'll be listening to the crawl space. But we can't talk about it yet. We may be able to talk about it next episode, because we just finished discussing it. The other people know plans, but let's just say that right now Spectacular Webs is in the process of trying to move to a place that gives us better bandwidth and better storage space, because for those who know the free part of Podomatic, doesn't give us a lot of space. With that being said, let's move on to emails and iTunes reviews, and we only got one. Unfortunately, it's not a fan mail. It's a spam mail from British Tobacco, saying that we've won 1,000 pounds. So we're just going to ignore that.
Is that 1,000 pounds of tobacco or 1,000 pounds in British currency?
British currency.
See, 1,000 pounds of tobacco could at least be useful. I could sell that.
And make the go west.
Yeah, and then go to jail for not having a license to do it.
I apologize for any of our Native American listeners.
I apologize. I'm sorry. That just came out wrong.
I never apologize. Never. You'll never hear me apologize. I'm like Norman Osborn. I never apologize.
I'm sorry to hear that.
With that being said, let's move on. This episode that we're covering is the Kraven episode, entitled Destructive Testing. As we hinted at the end of our last episode, this might be on the same level as episode 12.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Oh, well.
Well, from the sounds of your voice at the end of the last episode, you hinted that you had some problems with this.
Well, I'll get into that. I'll leave that for a slight mystery, but you might be surprised.
Okay. Well, since we're talking about the recap, let's hand it over to Don.
Okay. This is 15. Episode 15, titled Destructive Testing, and the main villain is Kraven the Hunter. Kraven the Hunter is immediately introduced in the cold opening in Africa, chasing a rhinoceros, and though the other hunters want to, take him down with tranquilizer and guns, Kraven takes it down with his bare hands, and after this feat, and also taming his pet lion, he is brought by his lover Calypso pictures of the beast in New York known as Spider-Man, so he decides to travel to New York. We cut back to Midtown High, where after taking a test, Peter is trying to talk to Gwen after, the ramifications of the season finale from the first season, but he's cut off by Liz, who is coming off some seriously strong. She actually kisses him in the cheek, and it's pretty flirty with him. Peter resumes his job back at ESU, and while they is inquired on the whereabouts of Eddie Brock, he and Gwen are introduced to one who comes into play later this episode. Well, later that night, Spider-Man is web swinging, thinking, you know, Liz or Gwen. He is attacked by a bow and arrow wielding Kraven. As Kraven tries to hunt him, jumps off a building, chases him all around town. But Spider-Man, being superpowered and all, takes him down fairly easily. This destroys Kraven's so-called pride, and so Kraven uses his pet lion to track down Spider-Man's whereabouts using his scent.
And just walks around New York because, you know, the police apparently were on donut break.
I actually agree with that. But as this happens, Peter and pretty much the rest of the supporting cast are at the Midtown High state football game. And with a comeback around the last 30 seconds, what are they called? What's the football team have a name?
Midtown Mustangs. High.
Oh, right, Mustang. That's right. I knew they had a name.
Wow, I beat Greg to that.
Yes, you did. My mic was off.
That's the only reason. So, they do win the state game, but in the midst of this, Flash is actually injured at the last minute, so everybody's worried about him. Peter as Spider-Man swings to the city. I think, I'm not sure where he's going, but he's just swinging the city, saying, I shouldn't be worried that Flash is hurt because I shouldn't be worried about Liz. I should be worried about Gwen. And this is a beginning of a series of occurrences because while that was all going on, Kraven went down to ESU because he tracked Spider-Man sent there. And through a series of mistakes handled by one Miles Warren, believes that Spider-Man had bought his powers from the scientists. Kraven does the same and is mutated into a lion bestial monster.
Wait. Mistakes? I don't think Miles was making any mistakes there. I think he was pretty adamant in knowing what the hell he was doing.
We'll get to that.
Yeah,
that'll be a talking point. So, long story short, he tracks down Spider-Man, fights him in the middle of a museum, and they have a pretty brutal fight, which is awesome. The fight leads into Central Park, where through a series of web-slinging and... I actually don't know how he beats him, but he beats him. Spider-Man knocks out Kraven the Hunter, and is distracted 1 second, and then Kraven disappears, who is rescued by Calypso, and we are revealed that they are being bankrolled. Yes. They are being bankrolled by the one and only Master Planner. Peter returns to the hospital, where Flash is going to be okay from a leg injury. I think his leg was like twisted or something. And though Liz was all over him 1 second, she's all over Flash in the next second. And that is the end of destructive testing.
Actually, then you twisted around. It actually ended with Master Planner asking Kraven if he likes to hunt in packs. But you see, Don, when I go meow, I actually am doing it to women that are, you know, over 18.
You did not just imply that I like girls under 18 while you date girls over 18.
I'm not the one who fawns over Liz Allen.
I don't follow what it was like. All right.
I like Silver Sable.
But now that I've embarrassed Don enough, enjoyable episode. There's a part where we'll talk about the lion, Kraven using the lion to search around New York, because there's a scene in there that I absolutely love, and it's actually... It's a 2 second scene, but it's one of my favorite in the series, but we'll get to that. So let's start off talking about music. Let's talk about Kraven's theme.
You go for it. I didn't notice it. As per usual in this episode.
I actually think I prefer Calypso's drums. They're very eerie.
you know that she's around when there are drums. I did catch that.
And they hinted supernatural powers.
Yep. But, you know, it did have... It was a nice mixture of sort of African and Russian, you know, thematic music in there. At least that's what I heard. Did you guys catch that?
Yeah.
Especially in Africa in the cold opening.
Yeah. But, like that first fight, his theme, and, you know, it had bits of sort of Russian folk music and African folk music sort of mixed together a bit. I very much enjoyed that.
That is the character.
Yeah. See, why do I... Why can't you ever catch any of these things, Don?
I can't. I just don't really... I don't know. Like, it has to be really, really off-kilter.
And I'm you're too busy fawning over Liz Allen. That's what it is.
Shut up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what's your favorite line in the cartoon again? In this episode?
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But she's still over 20. Or 18.
No, she's 19.
See, still, she's legal.
I don't get hard on an underage cartoon character. I just like how the character is written. If it wasn't obvious enough by my actual explaining of that back in
the again, season. we're going into this.
We can edit this.
Yes, we can.
No. Leave this in. The people need to know.
Remember what I was talking about last episode, where I was talking about people not obviously getting the joke and taking things too seriously. But moving on, let's talk about Craven's fight, or excuse me, not Craven. I was looking at the wrong note. Let's talk about the fight music. The fight music in the second fight had this awesome rock track to it.
How so?
There were very dark undertones to it, and like, you know, it was very unique onto itself. And you know, for the first part of that fight, you know, Kraven was whooping Spider-Man left and right, and so, you know, you really felt like, ooh, this is really a serious fight. And then halfway through, as they started going into the park, undertones of Spider-Man's theme, you know, da 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 da.
Are you talking about the after Kraven's been mutated, or like the one when they first meet?
The last fight.
You know,
okay.
Halfway through, Spider-Man theme starts to seep into the music itself and mixes. As you know, Spider-Man starts to win, his theme starts to overtake that fight music theme, which I thought was a nice touch, sort of to showcase, you know, here's, you know, Kraven at the beginning had complete control, but as the fight went on, Peter and Spider-Man was slowly taking control of the fight and eventually was able to overpower him. And that was a great way in a short amount of time to showcase what was basically this long fight sequence without using words.
Mm-hmm. Without using words like, I'm winning, he's losing, I'm winning. Yeah.
Well, you'd be surprised. You know, people do use that, and it's like, it bores people.
Really? I'm just going to take that as read. I'm not going to ask for any explanations.
But it's like, in Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, and your favorite movie.
Second favorite movie behind Who Framed Roger Rabbit. But yes, one of my favorites. And a little reprise song in the middle of the movie. Why can't I think of it? Darn it. It's the one.
No one fights like Gaston. No one eats like Gaston.
No. No. It's the one between Belle and Beast. You know, I thought I saw, you know, in a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Where were they outside? If I... And that thing in the movie is a very short thing, but it basically, in a short amount of time, in a span of like 3 to 5 minutes, tells sort of what a story of them gradually falling in love over the span of what is supposedly a couple of months. So
it, you mean like an exhibition?
Yeah, it's...
Montage.
Yeah, well, it's a montage, but, you know, it tells that story of those couple of months' worth of stories in a short amount of time. You know, same in that same movie, the Kill the Beast song. You know, instead of this long, drawn-out, you know, discussion about whether the Beast is dangerous and whatnot, you have this great song where you show Gaston riling up the villagers. I mean, the villages. Villagers, excuse me. I was saying villages.
Beast must die!
Stick your courage to the sticking post. Or screw your courage to the sticking post.
What's this podcast about again?
We're discussing music.
Well, Greg, did you catch anything?
Well, actually, I did. And Kraven's theme mixing in with Spidey's theme, especially when Spidey pounds Kraven into submission at the very end of the fight. Love that. I think this is the first time we've actually seen Spidey beat a villain with his fists.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Let's move on to animation, since I've talked about Beauty and the Beast enough. I'm sure it won't be the last time, since I just picked up the Blu-ray and it's freaking awesome, especially that commentary track. let's talk about
Kraven. Animation.
What was that?
Nothing. Go ahead.
I hate you. Let's talk about Kraven's costume.
Kraven's okay. His costume or
his costume, as in when he first appears in the city, his costume.
That's exactly the same from classic Kraven. Well, okay. Well, Kraven, he did have like legs. In the original comics, but then, like, I remember specifically Kraven's last hunt, he barely wore any pants. But it's pretty much exactly the same, I think.
Yeah, it's a very classic looking Kraven.
Yeah, and that's what I liked about it. Considering what's about to happen in the episode, you have a very classic looking Kraven. So I did appreciate that they came out with that. I think color scheme wise, it's a very different villain from the usual Ditko villains, considering that there's no green in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's...
Why, you're right.
I mean, it's, you know, leopard print. Or cheetah print.
Leopard.
Oh, I mean, it's still a Ditko character. I mean,
yeah.
As this episode was number 15, Kraven the Hunter first appeared in Amazing Spider-Man issue 15. Hey!
So,
I thought that was a nice symmetry.
That's why you're our historian, Don. And talking about historian, let's talk about Kraven's transformation scene.
Okay, let's do this.
I have to do a bag segue once an episode.
What? I don't know. Like, what did you guys think? I'm not going to hawk at them. Like, what did you guys think about that little twist in the plot?
Well, let me go first on this one. Kraven was
presented... Well, I know. Wait. We're not talking about Blipot. We're just talking about animation.
Ah, animation. It was very well animated. Very well animated.
Yeah, there you go. Now, can we talk about the plot?
I did like how his fur was black before it turned orange.
Well, the reason I wanted to stick to animation is because I got a very much a American Werewolf in London vibe from his transformation.
Well, you said that before, right?
Yeah, well, you sort of had the same thing also going with the Lizard's transformation as well. But this even resonates with more with me, considering it is more of a furred creature.
Kraven's a furry.
See, that's why Disney didn't want any more Spectacular Spider-Man. They can't have any more furries.
Yeah, because they don't have enough with Mickey and Goofy.
Donald, and I could play a clip from Bob and Tom right now, but it's the PG show.
Parental guidance show.
It is? PG?
That's what we keep telling ourselves. You know what? You guys want at it. Okay, move on to the talking point. Talk about the similarities and differences between this Kraven and the one in the comics.
Go for it, Greg.
Well, I'll admit, Kraven in the comics was never my favorite villain. I always thought he was the lamest of the Lee Ditko creations. He just seemed like a weird parody of the Most Dangerous Game. I mean, I get what they were going for there, but I just never particularly liked him until Kraven's Last Hunt, and it's something that JR has said before. Would anyone like Kraven if Kraven didn't blow his own brains out?
Mm-hmm.
Now, as for the transformation here, I don't hate it as much as some other people do. I don't love it either. I think the way they present this guy as this obsessive hunter, I could see him going for this. I just think there are a few steps missed in between here. I mean, he loses in one fight and then he decides to mutate himself into this monstrous creature. I just don't buy that so soon. If he had to quote, to talk about another Greg Wiseman show, the pack were introduced in very much the same way. Xanatos mailed them photographs to get them interested in hunting the gargoyles, and they get defeated by the gargoyles. They were defeated three times by the gargoyles before they upgraded into cyborgs and mutates.
Well, I think...
Craven did it after one defeat.
Obviously, this is them being influenced by the Ultimate Comics version, but yes. I agree, it was rushed, because again, even that had its segment in being, you know, there were a couple arcs before Kraven finally transformed into a beast. I mean, I want to chalk this up to the fact that, you know, they weren't sure if they'd have a second season, and they wanted to make Kraven part of the new Sinister Six, and so they rushed it. What do you think, Don?
I'm sorry? I didn't hear you.
We're talking about the similarities and differences between this Kraven and the one in the comics.
Well, I know. I just didn't hear what you last said. But, okay. I kind of, you know, Kraven is like the easiest, the villain from the Spider-Man world guys that says, well, that guy sure sucks. And I'm not saying that there's not any legitimacy towards that, but I think in the first half of the episode, I thought he was awesome. Like, I really love the way they played him off. Like, I thought the whole thing was believable. I mean, he wasn't even an outright villain. I mean, he was kind of stupid. let me travel the globe, go to another country and fight this guy. But that's how Kraven rolls, so I kind of liked it. But then, like, they made him, like, this is something that's kind of bothered me the more and more I think about it. It didn't bother me as much when I originally reviewed this episode in the crawl space. But just look at, he looks like a big, dumb, like, you know, with the under, like the large hands. It looks really silly, and I'll be fine with it if it was like a one-time thing. But like, he's permanently stuck like this, and with a tail and everything. It's I don't know.
I don't think the plan was for it to be permanent. I really don't.
Well, why do you say that?
Just because he keeps saying, just because Greg Wiseman has kept saying in interviews, I have this long-term plan for Kraven, trust me on this. And he knew people hated the transformation. He kept telling people to trust him. And at season three, there would be a payoff. So I'm thinking there may have been a plan to mutate him back. I don't know.
Well, it may have also had something to do with Miles Warren, which we'll talk about later. But since we're at this point, I do want to talk about Kraven. Which is obviously the silliest scene in the episode was Kraven, you know, taking his lion out for a walk, hunting for Spider-Man scent.
Goliadkin.
Yep. And then, just the fact that they're walking, and, like, everybody's behind, their cars are stopped, and they're just walking. Apparently, there's no police available to pull them over. I'm like, they can shoot the lion.
Or at least say, you know, you can't have that kind of dangerous animal in a city full of people.
Yeah,
but like that would be an address, but whatever.
I just want to see the scene where the lion walks up to the poodle. But my favorite scene is when they're in the Daily Bugle, and this is one of my favorite scenes in the entire series. And you see everybody's behind the desk, and the lion's is in Jameson's office, and it's so Jameson. Jameson's just yelling. You don't have any noise because you have the music playing over everything, but you see Jameson just literally giving the riot act to both Kravenoff and the lion.
I bet the lion crapped on his carpet after.
I mean, tell me, Don, that wasn't an awesome scene.
It was amusing. It was funny. I remember when I first I couldn't get my mind off of, like, where are the bloody cops, but I mean, it was a fun little scene. Well, here's a question. Is that, like, legitimately... I don't know. Because I remember Wiseman said that he never really created any new characters for the show. The lion's name, I can't pronounce it or forgot. Like, was that really his name from the comics?
There was a lion in the comics, and Kraven's son, the other Kraven, Alyosha Kraven, had a pet lion named Goliadkin.
Okay, that's pretty cool. I have the Alyosha Kraven issues, but I've not read them in a while, so I must have forgotten.
Well, with that being said, let's talk about the two fights between Spider-Man and Kraven.
Awesome.
Yeah, awesome, especially the first one. I love the choreography in that. The animation is just terrific. The animation was a little bit weaker on the second one.
I think that had a lot to do with that half of it was in the museum, and it was very dark, and so it was very hard to see moves.
I thought the scene in the museum was awesome.
I thought the animation was great all around. I really loved, like, what I really loved about this show's version of Kraven was that, you know, he was, like, the best at what he did, what he was about. But that still wasn't good enough to beat Spider-Man on his own. And I loved how he was good, but Spider-Man was always better. Like, you know, he was dodging and, like, in the middle of the street. So I was like, you just don't get it, and punches him in the face. Like, that was some good scripting. That was some good ass.
And the thing that was great, especially about the first fight, is not only was it a good choreography. Damn, I'm messing up words. But there was a lot of great wit in it, too. And it just came off as a classic Spider-Man fight. Because of that wit. You know, the whole thing, you know. So where are you from? Mother Russia. By way of Mother Africa.
I love that line.
Two mothers and I'm still no manners.
Well, that's my favorite line for the episode. We've gotten ahead of ourselves.
we'll get there. But it's just like, you know, the whole boxers, you know. This does not affect my masculine quota.
Oh, dude, you're still a violin, too. Okay, you know what my favorite line was?
No, wait, okay, but we're not talking about favorite lines. We can mention lines now.
Stop saying the lines.
I didn't mention the whole line. Whatever.
You mentioned both of ours.
But they were like the two
I really like the fight scene at the end in the park where Spider-Man was looking for Kraven, and he said, "Here, kitty, kitty, kitty." Yeah, I got my hand on the gun. I got it.
Keep telling yourself that. Too bad it's firing blanks. But,
Okay, go on. We can edit this.
No, we're not. This is stated! this is the new Spectacular Webs podcast. But... You know, again, yeah, I definitely liked the first fight better than I liked the second fight.
Because it wasn't fighting a dumb lion.
Lion, cheetah, leopard.
You know what? I like both fights equally, personally, because I like it was different. It was different, you know. It wasn't the same thing, and like I really liked how he was talking on the phone, running from his life, and then Liz says, "I really, really need you, Petey." He's like, "You do? Okay." Beers was like
"You really thought that like everyone would have thought of you."
Yeah, I love that, you know, just kind of like, yeah, great party there, Peter. You have a madman who's been transformed into a feline werewolf that's literally on your ass, and you're more worried about that Liz wants you. Wow, you can really tell that this man's a virgin.
Jeez.
Let's talk about the continuing movement in the soap opera that is Peter Parker's relationships and the overdramatization of Flash's injury.
Oh, man. Dr. Octopus. Okay, what were we doing again?
We're talking about...
The love triangle?
Yeah, Peter's relation... Don't you mean threesome?
No, I'm in the triangle.
He wishes. Peter wishes.
But Peter's relationship and the overdramatization of Flash's injury.
Oh! Well, it's not that you had a problem with that.
Well, you guys go first.
Great.
Well, he's never been this much of a chick magnet, and he's loving it. You can tell he's loving it. I don't think he was trying to be an asshole, but if he really wanted Liz to back off, he could have made her back off.
Yeah.
He was loving it.
Just like in the comics.
But I just love the look on Gwen Stacy's face, you know, at the beginning where, you know, Liz comes to mind and kisses him and all of a sudden his attention's turned to Liz now. And it's just a look like, oh, no, you didn't, girlfriend.
I love the look on her face when Peter puts his hand on the glass that she had just cleaned in the Connors lab.
And that goofy smile.
And as for Flash's injury, well, he ain't going to be playing football anytime soon. We know that. And I think in a way this is setting up what would happen to him later in life, because if you remember in, I think it was First Steps, Kong mentioned that he may have thrown away his football college career also, and we know Flash eventually joins the Army in the comics, and this may be something that would have eventually led to that.
Yeah. Don?
Not being able to go to college.
That's an interesting note. I didn't have a problem. To me, like it seemed like Flash got hit, and like it looked like he broke his rib. Like his ribs were broken the way he was tackled. But I can see, like, you know, it was a horrible injury.
Thank you for catching on to what I was going to talk about, but continue.
they did make it through this whole, like, remember the Titans ripoff, where they're all, like, waiting in the hospital, wondering whether he's going to live or not. But I like, you know, it's probably one of the best parts of the second season, the whole Liz Gwynn Peter thing, because it's done so. He's thinking, and when he's web swinging, you know, when he's by himself, he says, you know, web swinging at like, you know, 300 feet in the air never made me feel this it's dizzy or whatever, you know, Liz or Gwen or Liz. And I like how he's saying, why am I even bothering with Liz? I like Gwen, don't I? I like that self introspection. So it's some good stuff, I think.
I'll start off with a relationship. Yeah, it is a thing of it's painfully obvious that this guy had, you know, doesn't know what to do because he's never had this many girls fawning over him in his whole entire life. And
I think this is the first time he's ever had any girls fawning over him.
I did actually like Mary Jane's the fact that she had them in the lines, you know, she's in the background, and I like that about her character for right now. But, you know, this is just, and this will continue throughout the second season, this sort of romance between Gwen and Liz and Peter, and it's just fun to watch. My problem with the over-dramatization with Flash is the way they were in the hospital and the way they were, you know, worrying about this injury, you would have thought Flash was in a severe car crash and was on the verge of life and death. As a foot, and then for him to come out and that he injured his knee. I'm sorry, I'm calling shenanigans on this because there's a screw up somewhere. As a football player myself, first off, high school, but I played my fair share of football with the league and that stuff. Knee injuries, while serious, I mean, people care. There wouldn't be that. I think it was just over dramatized, especially considering that, again, the way he was tackled. He was tackled in the shoulder area. In fact, as of this
report. Well, he was tackled like in the side, wasn't he?
He was more upper. He was tackled from the side, but he was tackled upper body, is my point. Like, he was hit from, like, the stomach up. Like, it was a wrap tackle and driven to the ground. If there was
Didn't two people tackle him at the same time?
No, it was one person that got to him.
Right.
There was another person behind him who didn't get to him, but there's one person that got to him just as he threw the ball. And by the way he tackled him, the only injury that could have happened is the same one that just happened to Tony Romo. A little wink, wink. We're recording this the Wednesday after the Giants Cowboys Monday night game, in which the Cowboys lost.
I guess Kevin Altieri is not a football expert.
But yeah, you know, he injures his. It doesn't fit. You know, he got hit from above. How did he injure his knee? And then the whole thing just felt over dramatized and. I mean, it sets up what Flash is going to be doing for a majority of the second season, but it just felt over-dramatized.
I will give you that, like, it was a little melodramatic, because, like, it's just, you know, Mustangs win stage! What, that like, guy on speed or something, like, wait a minute, Thompson is down!
That's Seymour, like, O'Reilly, by the way, doing the, as the announcer at Seymour.
See, okay, I saw in the credits his name, I was like, where was this guy? So, ooh, okay. They got very used to breaking bones. Oh, hey.
I'm not saying that, you know, people wouldn't be caring about him, but, you know, it was like they were sitting around like he was on the verge of life and death. I'm like, he hurt his knee. He will recover from a knee injury.
Well, I can understand Liz taking it a lot more seriously than it was, because she does. She still had an emotional connection to Flash.
Yeah.
He was in a wheelchair, probably would be better. Like legitimately, like if his injuries were such that he was like temporarily in a wheelchair, it would be. I agree. It would be more believable.
Yeah. Let's move on to our final talking point. Let's talk about the start of Dr. Miles Warren's role in the second season.
Miles Warren is a
he's a scumbag.
God, I'm gonna have to bleep so much. Jackal.
Wink. Not that means anything.
Yeah.
No, it means nothing. Just a word I picked randomly.
But I like that, you know, when we first see him, you know, he's trying to push Dr. Connors to continue his lizard research, you know, great with mammalian DNA research, and it's like, you know, that's a dead end. And yet, you know, it gives you a glimpse into what his evil mind is about, and the fact that, you know, he really wants to make this work. And even though Connor said it's a dead end, he's still, you know, he secretly behind their backs, he's stolen Connor's research and is trying to perfect it. And he's willing to sell it.
He finds out.
Yeah, and he's willing to sell it to Kraven for money, to an extent.
And it's obvious Norman Osborn picked this guy to be in this lab for a reason.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like he's selling any of Connor's stuff to Kraven. He just—I think that what was it intended to be like? Warren mixing up Connor's lizard serum to make Kraven off, or I thought that Warren did it on by his own.
Well, he took basically
Connor's same research.
Yeah, it's the same research, just used feline big cat DNA instead of lizard DNA. And took it, and, you know, the whole, you know, it needs to be jolted for a certain amount of time with electricity, which works on that. Which, as we all know, electricity works perfect on formulas, not on Godzilla.
Well, as you know, Mr. Tokyo SOS.
Right. Which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com.
This has been another shameless plug.
And now you know. Because knowing's half the battle. G.I. Joe!
The other half of the battle is violence, by the way.
Well, here's something. I'm not complaining at all about the characterization of Miles Warren. They write him very well. But I would have liked it if they did go with the comics route of just having him be, like, you know, a friendly guy who, after the loss of Gwen Stacy, slowly goes into insanity. I think that would have been more interesting. Although they do write him very well in this,
they would have that would also taken him into pedophile territory.
Yeah,
I thought pedophile territory. That Gwen would have been like younger than 10 if it was a pedophile, but it's like it'll be a creepy stalker teacher thing. But even still, that would be fun, especially since you're saying that this entire show is about sex anyway.
Yeah, and we know he didn't plan to kill Gwen off during the series. That may have happened in a DVD sequel, but he was. I think he. It's safe to say he was planning the Jackal.
Yeah.
So maybe became the Jackal that would have been before Gwen died.
Well, it depends on whether you think that the Jackal can come up before Gwen dies or not. But it's sort of like, you know, King Harry Osborn being high school.
Well, maybe Deborah Whitman would have been who he was lusting after.
Oh yeah, we didn't even mention that she first appears.
She first appears.
Has as much lines as Holy Brown.
Well, what do you guys think of that? You know, I would be remiss if I didn't bring it up. He did change the race of Deb Whitman. In the comics, she's white. You know, here she's black. Do you think?
None of these race lifts ever bothered me. This isn't the last Airbender where it does bother me.
Well, it's like, I mean, Deborah Whitman. She only had, like, one major arc in the comic books, really, and then was in the 90s. I mean, like, there's not a single fan alive who's a Deborah Whitman shipper for any other character. So, like, I doubt seriously that anybody was offended. And if they were, they need to get over it.
Says that. Yeah. You know my thing. You know, I see both points of view. I don't think it's that big of a deal, but at the same time, you know, I changing a character just because for the sake of, you know, hey, I can change her, you know, like, somebody writing a Spider-Man fan fiction and changing, you know, taking away Black Cat's, you know, skin tight, you know, body.
Oh, you are not.
Don't go there. Oh,
yeah, I'm not gonna. I'm just gonna stop now.
Oh God! No! The fans and the fans don't know the answer. They don't know what you're talking about, but we do.
Oh, yes, we do. And I'm sure I'm gonna get a lot of hate mail on that too.
Was that really necessary? Did you really have to?
They changed Miles Warren's race also.
No, you see.
Like a,
he's Indian American on this. Oh, and just for the record, the reason he and his brother have different accents is because Aaron Warren is older. He's kind of Indo-European. They moved to America when Miles was just before Miles was born, so that's why Miles has an American accent and Aaron Warren doesn't. He grew up in Europe.
Yeah, Aaron Warren kind of sounds like he's like from the UK, but
he is.
See, I wasn't sure. I thought that just like a tan or something. I wasn't really sure if they were like
Indo-European, but... Indo-European, and Indian American.
Yeah. By the way, Don, it will be a contest to see if anybody can figure out what the hell I'm talking about.
Maybe a certain administrator on the cross space will email in and complain with a cease and desist letter.
But it's not like I hate the person.
No, I disagree with him. You compared the change of a race of a minor character in Spider-Man to the changing of costume for supporting characters.
Characters change costumes all the time in comics. Okay, moving on.
Moving on.
That's, I'm getting a little bit uncomfortable with that. But
we'll talk about that later off.
I thought what they did with Dr. Warren was terrific. Just how subtle it is, and over the course of the season, how he builds up and he becomes even more and more of a bastard. I mean, the way he just lied to Kraven's face and turned, was able to get the guy to go from threatening him to paying him, and even little things like a handgun hidden in his lab coat.
Yeah,
a very realistic looking handgun.
Can't believe he got that past
BS&P.
Yeah, but speaking of BS&P, let's move on to favorite lines. Don, I'll let you go first.
All right. Well, okay. Which ones haven't you said already? Because I like the line where Peter.
But I didn't say the line fully, so you can say the line. You know.
Like when they're in the alley and Kraven knifes his leg and he sees his pocket, he says, "Hey, there was a half price sale on full length dotted pajamas or long johns." And it doesn't reduce my like macho quotient, something like that. I like that.
Doesn't reflect on my match.
Hearts, not dotted. Hearts.
Yeah, it's hearts. Actually, you know, the hearts thing, it's actually funny. That sort of falls into the sort of Ron Clements and John Musker sort of rules of comedy, which John Musker and Ron Clements, they were the directors and producers of The Little Mermaid and Aladdin, and Hercules, and Princess and the Frog. And their three rules of comedy is, when in doubt, revert back to hitting a guy on the head, dropping the pants with the funny underwear, and making the funny face.
I think it's a coincidence. I mean, especially this is directed by Kevin Altieri, who, you know, I know most from Batman the Animated Series, and this is the guy who really always directs really action-packed and violent episodes with, like, fist fighting. So, I think it might have just been a storyboard gag, personally. I'm not sure if it was.
But I'm just saying it reminds me of that.
Okay. I have an additional line, real quick.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like Rand, like when Rand, like I think it gets like a significant yardage in the game. It's like, and like the cheater is like, Rand, you know, and then like Sally's like in her most annoying.
Rand, he's my man.
Yeah, he's my man. That's so repugnant, but it's awesome. It's good stuff. I didn't need to hear it, but it was kind of amusing.
Greg,
I liked Mother Russia by way of Mother Africa. Two mothers and still ill mannered. Love that line. It just amuses
That's a brilliant
me.
Line. Mm-hmm.
And I also liked It's not like I want bad things to happen to Flash. Okay, it's not like I want super bad things to happen to Flash. I think we can all relate to that one.
Yeah. Is that all?
There's a lot of other lines I like, but I'll stick with those two.
Yeah, there's a whole thing like, you pray I would honor silent and with dignity. Honor? Silent? Dignity? Obviously, you don't know me very well. And it's just like classic Spider-Man. There's the line in the during the football game where, Sally's trying to pull Liz away from Peter and, like, geeked him is contagious. Well, I don't mind catching whatever Peter's got.
Like, gonorrhea, syphilis, or...
Hey, say what you will about Sally, but she's always been a good friend to Liz, even when she was dating Peter.
And then, of course, there's my favorite line, which, it shouldn't surprise anybody. Here, kitty, 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 kitty. Man, I'd rather be playing hide-and-seek with Black Cat. I so prefer my felines to be female.
Love that line.
That's such an awesome line.
Can I ask you guys something? Okay, I never got it. How exactly did he beat Kraven? It's like, all of a sudden, he, like he's running by Wes, and Kraven's slightly slowed down, and Spider-Man, like knocks him out. Like, but I don't get it. Was he tired? Was he, like... I never understood that.
He beat him in the submission.
He exhausted him through trying to rip through the webbing and then beat him
in the submission. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that would have been a play.
And one of my notes for this episode is it's a shame we didn't get a season 3 because you can tell they had a plan for Calypso. You can tell. They were setting her up and I think we can see a little bit of that in that radio play that he did at the last gathering. Calypso played a big part in that. She turned Dr. Connors back into the Lizard using voodoo magic and...
Which ooh, was, that would have been awesome! Oh, that would have been terrific!
And all Greg said about that was, if you look at that radio play, you can see certain elements that he would have introduced in canon for both series. I'm thinking we would have gotten his version of, I guess, Torment in season 3 with Orlando. When they went down to Florida, but that's just my theory.
Yeah.
I think we'd have seen Return of the Lizard, and I think Calypso would have been behind it. And I'm basing this on the radio play.
Well, let's move on to ratings now. Who wants to go first between you two?
I would give this one a B+. I would give it a full A, except I just thought that.
Well, we rate like out of a 5-point scale.
Okay, I give it a 4. I'll give it a 4 out of 5. It would have been a full 5, but I thought Kraven's transformation was way too sudden, and it should not have been in its first appearance.
Don't worry, Greg. We all make mistakes. It's a gradual learning curve. But 4 out of 5 from Greg.
Speaking of mistakes.
Yeah. Don?
Well, what's the difference? I want to think. You know, I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 5 wins because like, the only thing I really don't like about it is Kraven turning into a big dumb lion. I mean, if he just upgraded his abilities to superhuman levels or something like that, it didn't actually have a physical change, the episode would still be the same, so. 4.5 out of 5.
Hey, he didn't turn into a big dumb lion. He turned into a big dumb lion cheetah leopard.
That's two of the reasons to hate it.
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5 as well. Honestly, a much better episode than the first episode. Not the first episode of the second season was bad, but it's, much better. Yeah, much more interesting, a lot more stuff going on, and really leading into what, let's put it this way. Let's just let the cat out of the bag. Next episode, I guarantee you, it is, for all of us, one of our favorites.
Very fun episode next time. Yeah. Very fun.
Yeah. I won't be surprised if we give it all 5s, but that's for next month. So, 4 out of 5 from me and Greg, 4.5 from Don. That's our ratings, and we're sticking with it. That's it for our show. Let's do our usual ending stick. Don, do you want to tell them all the other places they can find you on the web, like podcasts and Facebook and that stuff?
Okay. Besides the first and only Spectacular Waves podcast, I have become rather prolific on a certain podcast called Amazing Spider-Man Classics with Bertone and John Wilson. We go over chronologically every appearance of Spider-Man ever since the very beginning. Latest episode was episode 20. We just went over issues, I believe, 28 and 29. And aside from that, I've become a regular on Clone Saga Chronicles with Zach Joyner. And last but not least, I have become a regular rotating member on the Batman Universe Comic Cast, where we go over every monthly Batman comic book and issue.
Greg, is there other places they can find you?
I'm mostly around. This is the only podcast I'm doing. I've got an often neglected blog on on Blogspot, but I'm mostly around. I mean, this is my only real activity right now on the internet. And let's see. I would like to plug, since we all like Greg's work, Young Justice airs the day after Thanksgiving on Cartoon Network.
Oh, it's that soon? Oh, awesome. I can't wait to watch it.
Yes. And the Avengers cartoon so far is pretty good. The hour premiere I enjoyed. I missed it tonight while recording this, but I'm sure it'll be up not legally soon.
Or you can just catch the rerun at like 2 a.m. in the morning on Toon Disney XD. I will say this. I also watched the 2-hour premiere. Is it just... Am I the only one... Yeah. Or 1 hour from here. Am I the only one that caught Black Widow shaking her her tits?
I caught her too.
Yes, you are.
Black Widow on that show is being voiced by Vanessa Marshall, Mary Jane Watson.
Oh, really?
Hell yeah.
Another redhead.
Yeah, I love it as she knows she's walking and she's doing it a little bit, and Wash goes, "Who's that?" And Maria goes, "That's classified." I'm like, "That's classified, all right." Give me 10 minutes. Oh, I'll declassify her.
And I, since we haven't gone there yet,
we went there a long time ago.
I would like to rave about Eric Vespit's performance as Kraven the Hunter. I thought he did a great job. For about a year before that episode premiered, Jennifer L. Anderson, my very close friend, was raving about his performance, saying you would love it. I know you don't like Kraven, but you're going to love this performance. He rocks it. And the guy wasn't even a SAG actor at the time. He was an associate producer on the series who they gave the gig to, because they thought he rocked that that much on the show, and he was perfect for that character. Perfect.
Awesome. And you can find me at all my other places. Start off Thomas's Prerogative, my weekly video blog, which I have on the Anime Shaft podcast, which you can find at www.animeshaft.com. My Tokyo SOS podcast, the podcast dedicated to reviewing every Godzilla movie ever made. You can find that at, again, www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Hexcast, which is a podcast where me and my co-host, Rory Thomas, review every issue of Jim Billen's Terra, Witch of the Black Rose. You can find that right now on www.hexcastpodcast.podomatic.com. The Capes and Feathers podcast, which I do with my good friend Walter Bowman, whenever that gets back up, along with the Anime Asylum podcast, which I do with my good friend Josh Dunham, whenever we get time to do another episode of that. Don can preach the choir here that the Anime Asylum is just pure good fun.
It's pure, it's good, and it's fun.
Along with my Thomas's Prerogative, because I know Don's been enjoying my comic month.
Oh, yeah, you have done mainly DC books, and you explained why very clearly.
Yes, I did. We plug our friends, Brad Douglas and the Spider-Man Coral Space, who influences us, Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, and From Crisis to Crisis, and Tales from the JSA, and Back to the Bins. As I said, the Anime Shaft podcast, the Major Spoilers podcast, Clone Saga Chronicles, That Girl, The Oracle, a Barbara Gordon podcast, Kaiju Cast, and Nostalgia Critic, 2-1 Showcase, these, 2-2 Freaks, DJ Comics, Cavalcade, they're all our friends. Hopefully after the move, I'll have a list on the sidebar that will show all our friends, and so you don't have to just listen to me say them. You can check it out there. Don, do you want to tell them where they can find the show in his forums?
Currently, you mentioned the sticky thing is Podomatic, but typically you can find it on the Spider-Man Crawl Space. You can also find the show and its forums on thecomicforums.com. Go on there, listen to the show, and leave us some feedback on the forums page.
Yes, yes.
I think we should also plug Ask Greg, Greg Wiseman's Q&A forum, which he's had for since 1997 now. He only made the show, so if you guys ever have any listeners ever have any questions about the show, feel free to bug him.
and of course, you can... Oh, go ahead, Don.
I'm afraid to bug him even more after that interview. For 2 hours, man.
Hey, he's put up he's put up with me for years now. He puts up with me. He'll put up with you.
That's what she said. But you can also leave fan mail for the show at at spectacularwebspodcast@yahoo.com. I forgot for a moment there. We can, you can find us on iTunes, so please find us on iTunes and leave us reviews. Really appreciate when we get reviews, and we generally don't mind whether they're negative or positive or whatever. You know, it's just, you know. And
99% of them have a positive.
Yeah, except for one, and we talked about that one last week. Again, we're not going to get it. So that's it for this show. Next month, Reinforcements. An episode on Christmas. During Christmas time, in the month of December. How lucky are we? Probably one of the best episodes of the series. So until next time, Spider-Man fans, stay spectacular.
What did you say your name was?
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Which one of you is the captain?
Do we violate the treaty, Captain?
Red alert! All hands, battle station!
What are you scratching at?
Incorrect.
Can we just get down to it, please?
Prepare to attack. All hands, battle station.
No!
Captain!
Monthly Mondays, available the second Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.